Well, French onion dip. Mm-hmm.
The rest of them all went.
So maybe someday.
Do you know what the purpose of the
whole bills here?
Yeah, because the resolution said that we were going to talk about.
He's always the first person to like text me. Like, so Mark wants to. Mark thing is, he wanted me to go to Madison on Friday, next Friday. And then he goes, oh, I'm going to go with my mom.
We did that when the cruises
were.
I thought so.
Without
me. Oh, that's the purpose of
it? I would probably go for that.
And that's Tuesday. My secretary, did it indicate on the email what purposes? I didn't see the email, but the secretary report.
That's what just been like.
Is this your file?
I
can report
that.
It could be so much more like open. And then
the taller tile, more important specification.
First time where he's a 4-inch binder last night. Now he's like an idiot.
Yeah, he
tried to intimidate us, huh?
I said that. I
would just be like, they want to write.
I don't know.
Okay, it's 6:02. I will call the meeting of the Finance and Administration Committee to order. Citizen comments. Any citizens wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none. Citizen comments are closed. Reports from the chairman. Tuesday night, we have to, each of the committee chairmen has to give a report on how, what in our opinion, or how we feel about the new committee structure and how it works. I'm open to any comments or input that you have. If you want to call me or send me an email, as I try to put my thoughts together for that on Tuesday night. I think this is the last of the ride for the Finance Committee. Last meeting. It's been a privilege working with all you guys, and I just want to say that I have the utmost respect for our directors, Dave and Al. I think you guys do a great job. Bob, you guys, I think you really keep us informed as supervisors, as a chairman of committee. You made my job easy, and I appreciate that. So, thank you. Reports from the committee.
I have a report, Mr. Chairman. Am I recognized?
Yes.
Okay. At the last meeting, Supervisor Singer, among others, had brought up a situation asking if we could economize fleet for Department of Public Works and Facilities as far as using alternative fuels. So I sent to Mr. Sipsma a request to have that done at some future time. And just an informal meeting before our last meeting last month for Department of Public Works and Facilities. He agreed to address that during our meeting. So just briefly, I'll summarize by saying that alternative fuels are becoming more prominent due to the rising price of gasoline. Our department has, in the past, used alternative fuels in the form of compressed natural gas. We do have the infrastructure for such ability to do so in the future. One of the big stumbling blocks is the availability of vehicles to actually run on dual fuels is being produced by the auto manufacturers, running gasoline and both compressed natural gas. Also, there's an issue with range in terms of just running compressed natural gas for running a fleet. It's not a big range. It's significantly less due to the fact that you have to take some of your payload capacity and fill it up with a separate tank. But as the availability, two new manufacturers just jumped on board this month or last month, Dodge and Ford, it may be something that we can look at purchasing as opposed to having to retrofit vehicles. So a long answer to your question, your short question, is that yes, it is possible. We do have the infrastructure, but we need the vehicle manufacturers to come forward and present us with more viable products. That's your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other reports? seeing none. Report, committee reports are closed. Approval of the minutes for December 1st, January 12th, and February 16th meetings. Motion by Supervisor Gantz, second by Supervisor Rose. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the minutes are approved. It is now 6:05 from Supervisor Clark and Singer, resolution in support of Division of Health with the City of Kenosha. I think this somewhat comes out of our meeting, our last county board meeting, where we had a discussion regarding the agreement that was agreed to by the executive and the mayor. And one of the things that was said in that meeting was that perhaps we should at least, as a county board, show support for this agreement publicly. And the county board speaks in the form of a resolution. It's something that Supervisor Singer brought up. I talked with him about it after the meeting, and we decided that we would bring a resolution forward. So, Supervisor Singer?
I believe that the county board needs to have a positive opinion on what's going on to settle this, rather than bringing things to court all the time and being in butt heads. It was even commented by Supervisor Rose that we need to solve the problem, and that's what this resolution helps solve the problem, rather than pitting us against the city council. We don't want to be in a combative mode. We want to say we support something, that this is a good thing. You know, let's move on. Let's save dollars, save costs, and it'll be the best thing for our citizens. So that's why I support this.
Is there anybody from the Corporation Council or Human Services that can talk about where we are or what's happened relative to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did speak with Frank, who's out of town right at the present time. And he just indicated that there's nothing further in the way of progress or anything to report to the committee tonight since the county board met. So there's really nothing.
Just for the record, can anybody report the amount of time that this administration or our attorneys have spent on dealing with this issue, at least in the last 2 years, last 4 years, last 6 years?
We don't bill, so we don't keep track of our hours, but these two boxes are filled with documents that all pertain to that lawsuit. And they're filled.
Frank's mentioned that for this, he is keeping track of his hours.
Oh, yes.
For this one, so he'll have that. And I'm sure it's over 1,000 hours if you look at the time that everybody's spent, right? A lot more than that.
Any other discussion?
I don't know. I'm going to support the resolution, and I agree with it 100%. I do not know that it will even make a difference. You'd like to think that giving our opinion and letting the taxpayer know that we are at least looking out for their money is important, which is why I'm going to support it. But, you know, I'm really disappointed with the level of communication that's coming out of the city at this point in time, with us having to do all these lawsuits, and the people who lose are the taxpayers. And I think as elected officials, we need to be accountable to them. And in these cases, redistricting this, other issues, we're really, and it's not the county board, I think it's coming out of the city council. I really wish that we would have better communication. So that's all I'm going to say on it. I'll make a motion to approve it.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Gantz, second by Supervisor Rose. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Resolution passes. It is now 6:10, agenda item 7 from Corporation Council, ordinance repeal and recreate section 3.645 of the Municipal Code of Kenosha County, retention and destruction of records. Sure.
I think we can hold on to these for now, right? Mm-hmm.
The boxes are missing.
We need them all.
You got it.
Earlier, yeah.
Did you get these, Joe?
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to speak on this ordinance?
Yes.
Thank you. I think tonight this committee and soon the county board has an opportunity to help all of the department heads that are in the room today and all the other administrators for Kenosha County, because we can get rid of volumes and volumes of obsolete records that we now have to hold because of the state law on retention of records. This came about by a short one-sentence inquiry by Marty Laycock from IT asking if he could throw away certain records or how long he had to keep them. And in the old days, when Jerry Sanquist was the elected sheriff, somebody from civil process asked me a similar question. And I looked it up, and I found a little part of the statutes in Chapter 59, the chapter on counties, and it listed about 15 or 20 categories, things like crop reports and bounty claims and tax apportionment. I think this statute seemed like it was written about the turn of the century, you know, early 1900s. So it didn't have anything to do with the records in question. I called up the Attorney General, and I said, since there's no law that says we had to keep them for 3 years or 7 years, could we just throw them away? And the Attorney General at that time said, no, that means you have to keep them forever. So I thought that was ridiculous. So I contacted Assembly Representative Joe Andrea and asked him if he would try to get a law passed to give some relief to the counties for these records. He said, you write it, and I'll try to get it passed. So we did, and we had a general category then in Chapter 59 in the section on records, destruction of obsolete records, that gave us a 7-year general rule. If it wasn't written anywhere else, and it wasn't written that you had to keep it, after 7 years you could get rid of it. And as Dave and others here will recollect, that's the default rule we used to go by, 7 years. So when Marty Laycock asked me the question, I looked up just to get the new number because they reorganized Chapter 59, and it wasn't in there. They took that section out. So I read the whole Chapter 59. It's not in there anywhere. I found a reference in Chapter 19, the public records law. They put a section in there. And that new law says the county can pass an ordinance, and you can keep records as long as or as short as you want, as long as it's over 7 years. And if you wanted anything shorter, we have to go to the Public Records Board and get approval. And plus, anything you destroy, you have to first offer it to the State Historical Society for 60 days, and they get to go up or down if they want it or not. So meanwhile, you're hanging out there. And believe me, none of the department heads like to go to the State Historical Society and wait 60 days to toss these records. They did create, in the late 1980s, they gave us counties latitude, a little too much latitude, to make county committees on obsolete records. And I wrote that ordinance, and we did that. But because there's 72 counties and they didn't give any guidance, there turned out to be 72 different rules on how long to keep these records. So the state really felt they gave the counties too much freedom. And they repealed that law, and they put in they created a state public records bureau. And the State Public Records Board now is kind of the main, they have a website that's part of the state government. If you go there, they're the main body that rules up or down on request by all municipalities and the state, the University of Wisconsin, anybody else who wants to change the retention period for a record. The Public Record Board gets to rule up or down. So when the Joint Services some years ago contacted me to change how long they had to keep the dispatch tapes, the 911 tapes, they wanted to reuse them because they're very expensive. We made a proposal that they only keep them 90 days, and then we can reuse them. The State Public Records Board kind of went along with us. They said 120 days, I think it is. And the other rule that they have is if they pass it for one county or one joint services unit, other ones in the state can follow that rule. So that's kind of the backdrop. Now, when Marty asked me this question, I looked around to see if they had other rules on the kind of records he was asking for. And then on the website, they have a document library for some of the rules that they've made. And I found out that recently, in 2010, the WCA had created a commission on county records. And at the end of 2010, the Public Record Board approved it. And it was composed of representatives, a county clerk, risk managers, a board of supervisors person, another board of supervisors, register of deeds, the WCA president, Dennis O'Loughlin, Ellen Sorensen, the director of administration, and a corporation counsel. These folks did a lot of work, and they basically created what's in front of the committee tonight, which is a comprehensive look at county records and a schedule for destroying them, and also whether the State Historical Society has to be, if they have to be offered to the State Historical Society or not. Because the State Historical Society, in reality, doesn't have the room for these records, and they don't want these records. So the committee, this group that wrote this county records retention and disposition schedule, asked the State Historical Society for each of these records, each of these categories. And there's over 1,300 categories of records that are addressed in this schedule that's before you, that you can throw out after the required time. And the State Historical Society said yes or no whether counties had to offer these records to them. And for the vast majority, if you'll notice, they don't want them. And they've said you don't have to even offer them to us. So with one ordinance that we pass, or that you would pass if you feel that this is a positive thing for the county, you can help all of us who are amidst all these papers that we don't need anymore, and we can get rid of them just by following this schedule. Most of the time limits are less than 7 years, so it's a significant benefit. Most of these categories are less than 7 years, if you notice. Now, some are much greater. Some are 75 years. Some are permanent. You have to keep them forever. And it doesn't really apply to some records like those of the Clerk of Circuit Court, which is controlled by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And many of the records in the Register of Deeds have hundreds of cross-references, particular statutes on how long you have to keep them. But that's one of the addendums on the back. It's part of the ordinance that's in front of you. It's controlled by statute, but it's still in there for reference. This is going to be a great reference tool. If we put this on our website, hopefully, a lot of the employees can just check that first, and if they don't find it, then they can ask our office. So I think I'll just stop and open it up for some.
Supervisor Singer?
A lot of work for a simple sentence.
Was that It was an easy question.
It was an easy question. It was a hard answer, right? But you found the right answer, and I think that this looks like it will save the county a lot of dollars in space. Now, when it says notify, that's strictly that you do have to notify the WHS. And then the wave, the wave means you don't have to notify.
The right-hand column?
It's the third column to the right.
Yeah. WHS mm-hmm. notification, wave. Yeah, there's some mm-hmm. that says notify, like on page 2, Journey Enters Ledger. That's a fiscal year plus 4 years after it's created, and it's notified. Oh, one good thing that the committee did was asked what these abbreviations stand for, what these CR plus 7 years mean, and all that, all those other cryptic abbreviations. So this is passed in two documents at the website of the Public Records Board. And this document is the key to what these abbreviations mean, but I didn't want to have our employees have to look at a state website to find answers. So our secretary, since the last time, and that's the reason you got a new first sheet, page 1 of the records retention schedule, page 1, right below the heading, right at the top of the page here. I put the abbreviations right there so our employees and I can remember what they stand for. So CR means creation date, EVT means event date, FS is fiscal year, P permanent, S superseded date. So if you have something, but you've made a new policy and replaced it, then it's superseded. So that was a real good question by the committee, and I think this is an improvement to what the state has put out.
Yeah, I was glad to have that at the top, because when I was reviewing it to look at it, that's the first place I went, because on the committees I'm on, especially human services, they throw those acronyms around like water. You know, what's going on here? So, and this was easy to follow. I think it's a very good tool. Support. I'll make a motion to approve it.
I'll second that.
Moved by Supervisor Hanson, second by Supervisor Singer. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Do you have the original?
I do.
In front of you? Okay. Thank you.
Well, do you need to know? Put my eye out there.
Yeah.
Well, right. If
okay, it is 6:21, agenda item number 8 in Human Services, resolution to modify Division of Aging and Disability Services 2012 budget to add Intoxicated Driver Program Enhancement Grant.
This is a request to approve a grant that we received from the Department of Health Services, and this would enhance, most of the dollars will be used to contract with the Hope Council to enhance the Intoxicated Driver Program. They will be hiring a recovery coach under this grant and enhance the intervention with them. Jim Trushan is the manager of our mental health and AOR services. And if you want more detail, he is our expert.
Great, thank you. This is money that comes to us at really no county cost. It's a big move nationally is to reduce drunk driving, and there's a widespread appreciation that, especially for repeat offenders, seems to be very little other than jail to reduce the incidence of drunk driving. For every one time a person has been picked up for drunk driving, they've been already driving drunk 300 times. So that's pretty shocking. Right now, our county responsibility is really only towards the indigent, and that is to provide funding at local counseling associates. But this grant helped us to build upon really pretty much as the state system to use evidence-based practices, such as motivational interviewing, telephonic continuity of care, the use of biomarkers. Biomarkers, you might have read, there was a newspaper article written recently that people who abuse chemicals tend to minimize their use, and to get a clear factual picture, what you need to do is measure metabolites in their bloodstream, hair, or fingernails, determine whether or not they're reducing their use. When we started using these biomarkers, we found that most people were minimizing their drug and alcohol use. So what we want to do is, this is a treatment program, not a punitive program. We report to the Department of Transportation to give a recommendation. We don't report back to the court. What we want to do is provide people with evidence-based care, develop our provider network to use evidence-based care, and then assign repeat offenders a caseworker who will be calling them and making sure that they're making all of their appointments and working through any barriers they have to help move people through their ambivalence, recognition, and actually taking steps towards their recovery. Our contractor, Hope Council, really knows that it's $50,000 year one, $50,000 year two. There is no money for year three. So this is very much a pilot program to gather data through the last part of this, which is called the Socrates tool, which is an evaluation to make sure that people are progressing in their recovery. We'll report that data back to the state and proceed on from there. So that's pretty much what this grant is all about.
What's your question?
Been moved by Supervisor Rose, seconded by Supervisor Gantz to approve. Supervisor Grady.
For this one-year $50,000 grant, how many individuals do you feel can be treated or retreated in this time period with this amount of money?
The people will volunteer. This is not going to be court ordered. They will volunteer. We think probably about 50 a year.
Thank you.
It doesn't say on this resolution that you have a second year of $50,000. I don't know if I asked this on the Human Services Committee or not, but where does it say that?
Well, we don't have it guaranteed. If the grant asks us for a timeline, and if we don't stick to the timeline and we don't provide the outcomes data that we say we will, there will be no year two. So we have to reapply for year two.
That's what I thought, and that's why I like the fact that if there's any positions created, they'll be eliminated if the grant runs.
Yeah, and that's
to make sure we put that in there so that we don't hire people with the expectation to continue on or be moved to a different position if the grant funding runs out.
Yeah, that's clearly understood.
All right.
Any other discussion on the resolution? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. It's now 6:26, agenda item number 10, resolution from Human Services, resolution to modify 2012 budget for the State of Wisconsin Women's Health Reproductive Health Program.
Did I skip 9?
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Doesn't matter to me.
Let's do 9.
Okay.
6:27, Human Services, resolution to modify 2012 budget for Family Foundation's Comprehensive Home Visiting Program. Okay.
Good evening. Thank you. The Health Department is very excited to bring forward the state grant that we've received. We're one of 8 agencies in the state that has been awarded funding to provide a home visiting grant through the Family Foundations Program. And it's an award of $366,000 for this year. We expect this grant to last 2 to 3 years and up to 5 years. We will be bringing staff on board that, of course, they will be notified that that is a grant position, and at the end of a grant, they will no longer be employed. But we'll have 6 positions: on nursing supervisor for public health nurses and an administrative assistant that will be implementing this program. The program will support strong families. It's a home visiting program for first-time mothers, and they'll continue to home visit for 2 years until the child is 2 years. It's an evidence-based program, and we'll be putting on the Nurse Family Partnership Foundation model program. Any questions?
Move approval.
Second. So moved by Supervisor Rose, second by Supervisor Gantz. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
Okay, agenda item number 10 is now 8:28. From Human Services, resolution to modify 2012 budget for the State of Wisconsin Women's Health Reproductive Health Program.
Again, thank you for letting me bring this forward. This is a grant that the Health Department has received to be the fiscal agent for Walworth, Rock, Green, Iowa, Lafayette, Grant, and Kenosha County for a women's health, a state women's health program, a reproductive health program. We will be, for the fiscal agent, we'll receive an administrative fee of $14,334, which you can see on the budget modification form, and it'll offset salaries and benefits. The health department also implements this program.
Move to approve.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Sands, second by Supervisor Gantz to approve. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it is 6:30. Agenda item number 11 from Public Works and Parks. Resolution to accept grant funding for the development and construction of a shared-use trail in Silver Lake.
Hi, John Rohde, General Manager of Park Operations. This is a resolution to accept grant money for the development of the Silver Lake Trail. That trail is will be on the northeast, northwest corner of Silver Lake and will actually connect the village of Silver Lake with Silver Lake County Park and provide access if you now to completely circle the lake with a bicycle or hiking if you so wish. The trail is an abandoned railroad bed and it lies, it is a DNR property, and we have already have a resolution, a prior resolution to enter into an agreement with the DNR to operate this trail, and resolution 22 authorized us to solicit for grant funding. And we have been notified that we are tentative recipients of a grant in the amount of $115,116, which is a stewardship grant to the DNR, and a Recreational Trails Act grant of $45,000. The total cost of the project will be $320,432, with the county's share being $160,216. So what we're asking here is that this resolution be passed and authorize me to accept those grant monies and that the budget be modified to accept them.
I move the resolution.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Grady, second by Supervisor Singer. Any discussion? Supervisor Grady.
A long time in coming. This has been back and forth with the DNR, who can somewhat be a little bit, oh, it's just a lengthy to deal with, so it's a fruition-type process. We're happy to see it done. Just the timeline on this, John, when are we looking at construction of this being implemented?
We have the RFQ ready for the consultants. We're just waiting for final approval of this, and we'll be able to send it out. I believe if everything went on track, if it passes through the next county board meeting, and we get everything out, they were talking about completion before the end of the 2012 paving season. So they're looking at probably being completed by the second week of November, I guess.
So that's on the optimistic side, if it all goes according to plan. Right. Otherwise, it might get pushed back to the following year.
Right. It'll be
my question.
Supervisor again.
I can't recall off the top of my head, but we have the full amount budgeted for, and then now we're going to apply the grants to reduce that. Do we not have this in the budget at all, and we're going to ask for $160,000?
I believe, I think maybe Jim talked about
it. We had extra funds in the budget for this or other bike trail or shared use or highway projects. It's all in the budget, so we use some of that money. That was in the budget.
Do you recall how much was in that line item?
Either 160 or 170,000 extra to cover this. Whatever that match amount is available within that budget.
Did we have this in mind when we set that up, or to have that exact of a number? I mean, were we thinking that this would? I mean, how do we get 160 in the budget, and that's what we need?
That's what was extra in there for bike trail projects.
So, I mean, I just have, that's almost the same question, and I guess I'm going to throw it to Dave as well. So where is this money coming from that is in our budget that we're matching?
I'll ask Jim. Yep. Jim, was it in the original adopted budget?
Yes.
And the purpose of it was for this kind of a general item, but we didn't specifically identify
correct.
It at the time of the budget, but we intended it to be for a project.
That's
like
correct.
This. And that dollar amount was, that was the dollar amount, the 160 or 170. I guess you can ask John, at the time you were preparing the budget, were you aware of this?
Yes.
So we were contemplating this, and I think when we set that budget up, we were contemplating it, right?
Yeah.
But we didn't specifically set that up for all of that, but that's we need all of it for this project, right?
Yeah.
Great leading question, Mr. Ritz.
All right.
Wasn't that part of the reason we got the grant then anyway, because we did have the matching funds available?
So you're saying in our budget, I guess at least for Tuesday, I'll take it on I'll take it without seeing it, but you can at least reference to the committee or reference to me prior to Tuesday, the where this is in our community, our CIP and the budget.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was they were talking about some other fund here, where this money was coming from.
Parkland Development.
Yes. Where's that fund, or what is that fund?
So that's
the waste management money. And previously, we were using it all for the KD Park.
Parkland Development. Yeah, it's been used over the years actually for a number of things. But that's what we're trying to do is let it accrue for KD Park at some point. So that's why it's a lesser desirable place, but it still is an option to take it to there.
Are there any other strings attached to receiving this money from the DNR or the state that we're not aware of any additional future budget costs? So, Dave, if you could just email a reference to where it is in the budget to the committee before Tuesday, I would appreciate it. Supervisor Gintz.
Just to finish my thought process, I have heard this talked about for quite a long time, and I'm inclined to support it because of the grants, but I think we have to be careful with spending money at this point on certain things. But I'm going to support it because of the grant money that we got, because I'm sure that we wouldn't get that in the future, and then it would cost us the whole amount. So obviously I'm a realist, but it is still $160,000 that we need to come up with. So I just want to make everybody aware of that. But I will be supporting it. Thank you.
Mr. Arbor has a comment.
I thought I saw something.
And I want to try to keep it brief, Mr. Chairman. Just to give a little history to reference what Supervisor Gintz is saying, yeah, this was discussed. I think it came to the old Highway and Parks Committee well over a year ago. And originally, some of the stipulations that the DNR had placed on us drove up the cost to, I want to say, it was just north of $500,000. There's since been a change of many folks at the DNR, and they are very supportive of this. And so when we sat down with them about 3 months ago, they changed philosophically to 180 degrees, and they are very supportive of this. And so they've worked through. They allowed us to make some design changes that can bring the cost down. So that from over a year ago where it was to where it is now is, the better part of $200,000. It was peeled out of that cost because of they're willing to work with us. So just to give you a little.
Any other discussion? I think we've already moved in. On the resolution, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
Okay, it is 6:38, agenda item number 12 from Public Works and Golf, resolution closing Brightondale Red 9, establishing an enhanced practice facility at Brightondale and outsourcing concession operations at county golf courses.
Good evening. Thank you for considering this. The resolution that we have before us is that the Red 9 continued to operate in 2012. Closing it in 2013. We also have a recommendation by the Public Works Committee that the enhanced practice facility be funded in the 2013 budget. And included in that resolution is we go out with an RFP for looking at the concessions of the golf courses to outsource that and bring alcohol sales to the golf courses.
Supervisor Rosa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the last resolution, we were concerned about $160,000 for a bike trail around Silver Lake, which I think is an excellent idea. Comparing that to the losses that we've sustained on the golf course, since 1999 is really disproportionate. We have lost, and I had Dave Gerson, Finance Department, developed this. Since 99, 2 years, we've been in the black. We have lost $2 million through 2010. $2,888,967. We add in the anticipated $200,000, which has been predicted for 2011. We're well in excess of $3 million. When this first started, I think it was a big surprise. Back in 2000, we had a loss of $267,000, and the weather was blamed, and the fewer golfers and inability to have fewer holes shot as opposed to the weather. But as we can see, year after year, and it was as high as 630,000 2002, 2010, 342,000. These are substantial numbers, and the proposal has been made that we would close the nine holes, the red and so-called red nine, to save money of $100,000 or so. If it's a good idea in 2009, it's a better idea in 2010. I just don't see it. It's not like we're breaking 18 holes down to 9 holes. We're breaking 45 holes down to 36 holes. I mean, this is an enormous course. So it's certainly the largest in Kenosha County. If you think of what are some of the other golf courses around the country, how many have 45 holes that we operate? You know, probably very, very few. So this is a big operation. The resolution, if you read this technically, does not close it in 2009. It says recommends to close. It doesn't say will close.
You're talking for 2013. You're saying 2009.
Yes. I'm sorry, 2013.
Okay.
It doesn't close it. It says recommends to close, which is different than will close. So it could remain open in 2013 under this resolution. I think that's a problem that should be dealt with tonight. If you intend to close it, say so. This practice facility, I'm very uncertain about that. We don't have enough facts on that. This resolution, I think, covers too many issues. This practice facility, how much is it going to cost? Well, someone said about $500,000. What is it? Why will this make us more money? What's the budget for it? If somebody is going to use it, are they going to have to pay a fee? And what is the fee for? Is it a driving range fee? Is it a bucket of balls? Or in other words, we have to know more facts here before we say, yes, we'd like to have this included in the 2013 budget before I say yes on this. How is this going to do anything to our loss? Is this just a... I don't see we're spending $500,000 if that's what the figure is. On a practice range, based on the information that I've been presented, is going to enhance our break-even point. I'd be happy at break-even. I mean, break-even looks good as compared to the numbers that are in front of me developed by the finance department here. So I don't think we have enough information to even take a position on that. I mean, we could oppose it this evening and just let it ride, but giving them the benefit of the doubt, to me, that ought to come out of here, come back in a separate resolution, some facts and figures, voting it up or down. The next clause, and I say this is a very, very broad resolution on the concessionary. I guess my first preference is to have the county operate it. We've talked about liquor license there for a long, long time. I'm persuaded by an opinion of the Corporation Counsel's Office we can't do it. This first came up quite a number of years ago, and a Corporation Counsel's opinion was drafted a number of years ago on that particular issue, and I have it here somewhere amongst these papers, but at any rate, if you look at the number of years that have gone by, we could probably have introduced legislation in the Wisconsin legislature to allow a county to issue a liquor license. Apparently, we're not authorized to do that. Probably should have acted upon that. This seems to be one way of doing it, but the idea of contracting out the concession area does raise some other questions. Again, this is okay as long as we're going to make some more money contracting it out than we would under the current system. I assume, and I don't know, but I assume that our current concession system is making some money, I would hope. I would hope that we're not operating a losing retail proposition here.
Are you asking that question?
Well, that is a question that I think needs to be answered to address this concession. And if we are making money or breaking even, what are we going to do here with respect to contracting out? So I think that's something that ought to be developed in, a separate resolution here. So, and then the final one, the support of the velocity study, I think that's, in general, a good proposition.
Supervisor Singer.
I guess I'd like to ask Mr. Dyer, what do we make on the concession operations?
I don't have any information right now.
Dave?
Jim, do you recall, did the study look at that? Did the study look at the concession?
Not a separate profitability
so we didn't,
for concessions.
My recall on the concessions is when you're operating it ourselves, if you fully burden it with the cost of our staff, the cost of all the supplies, and offset it against the revenue, we don't do better than break even. That's my recall. It could be worse than break even, but my recall is that it's not real profitable. Does that ring a bell with the people that are running the courses?
It's toward that break even to slightly above.
So the way I've looked at the concessions is it's a convenience for our customers. I mean, that's the way I've looked at the concession. It's not a big profit maker. It's a convenience for the customers. Does that, you agree?
That's very much true, yes.
I guess my question would be, if it's not a profit maker for us, what would make us think that somebody else would take it over if they can't make a profit on it?
Yeah, if I can address that, one of the big reasons why we think that it would be more profitable for outsourcing it is the ability to serve alcohol. I mean, I can't tell you how many people come in and ask for Bloody Marys every single weekend morning. You know, I can't tell you how many people hang up, when you say, you're talking to them about detailing an outing for them. Oh, you don't have liquor sales? Okay, thank you. Click. I feel that, our deficit that we ran last year probably would, pretty much be wiped out if we could, just for the golf that we turn away because we don't have alcohol sales. A lot of people enjoy a cocktail or a Bloody Mary in the morning when they play golf, or during your outings. And we have a lot of people that just say, I'm not coming to your facility if I can't get my Bloody Mary, or if I can't have a cocktail while I'm playing, or afterwards. So there's a lot of golf outings that just won't even consider us because we aren't able to offer alcoholic beverages to them.
And by having it outsourced, they can actually get a liquor license where we can't?
Correct.
Yeah. Anything else? Maybe later. Mr. Arbor?
If I can just say, we were at the Chicago Golf Show, we were at the Milwaukee Golf Show, and since we've been open since last Saturday, there has been a considerable amount of negative feedback about closing the Red 9. I mean, just... let you guys know, a lot of public has been calling me. I've talked to Supervisor Gentz, a lot of people have been talking to her, and we all have been getting a tremendous amount of feedback that the Red 9 should not be closed. Just wanted to put that out.
Supervisor Gentz?
I mean, there's a number of questions and concerns with this, and I knew we were going to have a good discussion. And listening to Terry, I got somewhat confused because he brings up some good points. But I guess my first question would be, did we have it checked out with our corp counsel that we cannot offer any type of alcohol? You've got it.
Yeah, here's the opinion. It's 2008.
Okay. So you're saying by outsourcing it, we could?
Correct.
Okay.
That would be a positive.
Let's go back to the biggest thing here is this practice thing. Where is, you know, how can I be convinced that we should spend $500,000 on setting up a practice area? Explain it to me.
If the Red 9 were to continue in its current condition, you know, we would be looking at about $1.3 million to fix that Red 9 up. Okay, now we're spending $500,000. What we're talking about is an expanded practice range. And again, we have 32 NCAA Division II teams coming this September to the facility. We're asking them to stop at Bristol Oaks to hit balls before they come to Brightondale because of our practice facility, because we don't have the ability to have full range use for that many people. There's going to be 160 players, and we're asking them to use one of our competitors' range facility before they come to our operations to hit balls. We have had, again, numerous conversations with the Wisconsin PGA having events at our facility. What kind of range do you have? We have 9 matted tees and about 250 yards maximum. You know, the other people playing in these tournaments, you know, hit it farther than 250 yards, so they can't hit, you know, drivers or, you know, practice the hardest club in their bag before they go out and play. So we've had a negative impact on outings because of our practice facility. So, yes, we are asking that we invest into a practice at range. What we're talking about is having a full, you know, 350-yard distance that we can hit balls, having an acre of grass tee so that you're not hitting off of concrete when you're hitting balls, that you're hitting actually off of turf and the ball reacts the same way. Setting up a sand game and chipping area, which we would use like number 9 red green for that. Setting up a 3-hole practice facility so that we can have a non-intimidating environment for our juniors, for our ladies, for our beginning golfers to come out, to grow more golfers in the Kenosha County area, to have more people being able to utilize the facility. We feel that having that practice area fits right into our mission statement of, you know, creating more players for, you know, the whole county and having that, you know, not only the Kenosha County golf courses prosper, but the other golf courses in this county.
Okay, how much will it cost to maintain it once we build it?
Well, that's where the savings, we're saying that over the Red 9, we're going to save.
Well, the Red 9, let's assume, is gone.
Okay.
Okay, so, I mean, keeping to say we're going to use money against something that's already gone, that doesn't make sense to me. So just let's go with, pretend the Red 9's gone and then talk to me about it. How much is it going to cost to maintain it after we build it? It's going to be, do we know it's $500,000 approximately to start with?
That's what the information that I've gotten from our architects, yes.
Okay, and what will it cost to maintain it?
We're estimating around $40,000 to maintain that.
What does it cost to maintain 9 holes? Not the Red 9, any 9 holes. What does it cost a year approximately?
We're approximately talking, I guess I don't have exact figures. When the study was done, we set up that the Red 9 was approximately $172,000 to maintain it.
Are we going to have to redo our sprinkler system and all the stuff we're trying to avoid by eliminating the Red 9 to be able to work with the practice stuff?
The practice facility will be maintained at a lesser level than the golf courses are being maintained. It will be for a different type of player, so it won't have to be in as good as conditions as the golf courses are expected to be, but yes, we would like to irrigate them to make sure that they stay green for play.
Have you had other groups that have called on you to have outings that would be more likely to go there other than the NCAA group? And that would be PGA, looking at anybody else other than that? I mean,
Wisconsin PGA, the Wisconsin State Golf Association.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is a national trend. I mean, Mr. Arbert sent out an email last week to all the county board supervisors that did have, you know, the practice articles in there, and it did highlight, you know, several articles from Sports Illustrated and the Wisconsin and the PGA magazine of, you know, it's a national trend that people are getting a little bit away from having the time to play, but they're spending more time practicing, and we feel that by adding this practice facility that we're going to be able to, again, create more players and maybe fit a niche that people are looking for.
Supervisor Gail Gentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to make a couple comments from our committee where we discussed this. This was discussed at the Public Works Committee. We had much discussion on it, and Supervisor Rose has certainly said that this is an all-encompassing resolution. Unfortunately, it probably was done not well thought out. I agree with them that there's too much in this resolution. I think that what the point that we were trying to get across was that, number one, we have a red nine right now, which is producing revenue. The goal of the golf course right now is to cut down the maintenance, cut down the costs to run that red nine and to keep it running this summer and give us the opportunity to take a look at it and see, is it going to be cost effective to continue to run that nine, or would it be more cost effective for the county and the golf course and the community to put in this practice facility? We don't have that. We don't have those figures. We haven't done our research on all of that. So we're kind of putting the cart before the horse. I would like this resolution to go back to Public Works. I would like us to take a better look at it. If you could defer it back to us, let us review it again. Let us go over it, come up with some facts, some figures, some dollars on what this is actually going to cost us. This year, we intend on running the red nine. We'll have some, if we have, say, 3 or 4 months to take a look at all of this and to really see how the golf season goes this year, how we do at the course, and come back with some good positive resolutions rather than trying to do this at the ninth hour. I can tell you that I've gotten a huge amount of feedback from the public. And everyone that I've talked to since this article appeared in the newspapers, everyone that I've talked to is against closing the red nine. It's something, it's just, it's part of our community. It's this golf course. I know that Supervisor Rose thinks that this has lost money. But you know what? We spend a lot of money on parks. We spend a lot of money. We get no revenue from parks, but we do get lots of revenue. We get lots of people coming in from other places to play these courses. And I think that Dan has gone and sold this course. He sold it at two in Chicago. He sold it in Milwaukee. So give him a chance to see what our feedback is. Bring this resolution back to us. Let us take a look at it and see if we can't come up with something more comprehensive.
I'm going to get my 2 cents in here. I would agree. I've had feedback relative to this as well. It's been mixed on the red nine. Some for it, some against it. They question, you know, why do you need 45 holes in one spot? That was a question I asked a couple of years ago when we were talking about, I won't say black or gold, but we were talking about doing something different. And I have concerns with moving forward because there are no financial numbers here. You know, to sit there and say we're going to use $500,000 worth of capital because it's going to help the other parts of the operation, I think we need to see the financial impact. What are those major assumptions?
how are you going to charge for that? If someone comes to golf for nine, is that a gimme? There's a lot of questions that I have, a lot of questions that people have brought up to me. I wouldn't have any of my clients make a decision financially like that without having some sort of pro forma to really lay it out. I think there are a lot of questions. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. My gut tells me that having a practice facility out there makes sense. But, you know, we've got to have those numbers, have that financial modeling, make sure it makes sense. Relative to the Red 9, my own opinion is it should be closed. We shouldn't spend any more money. We have something in our budget resolution to not make any capital expenditures out there on the Red 9. We didn't say that it needed to be shut down for 2012. 2012 was the year of figuring it out, given the, not a knee-jerk reaction, but giving the administration time to make that decision. What concerns me, and I've had a couple different golfers come up to me and bring this up, I'm concerned with if you're going to leave the Red 9 open and you're going to dumb it down, or you're not going to leave it at the quality that it is. You guys have worked so hard to make that course what it is, to restore that reputation, to have that product out there. And when somebody's out there, if you guys decide to let the grass grow longer and do all these various different things, somebody inevitably is going to be out there on the street saying, I was out there golfing, and you know, the fairways were terrible, the greens were this or whatever. They don't know whether you're talking about the Red 9, they don't know whether you're talking about the white or the blue. So if you need time to figure out what you're going to do, I say deliver the quality. If you're committed to having it open this year, do that. If you're going to close it, close it. I mean, if the decision has been made to close it, it doesn't make a difference whether it's 2012 or 13, unless you need time to figure out what you're going to do and you have a plan for something that you want to do going forward. So you have branded the county golf courses as a quality experience, and you are risking having this lesser grade golf course to the reputation of our courses. So I say either you're open and you're open, or you're closed and you're closed. There's no in between, and hopefully we've had a wonderful start to this year a little bit earlier. Hopefully that helps us. The next county board has to deal with these issues this summer into this next budget and figure out where you're going. I think you guys need the time. The discussion at the county board was to give you that year, not to make any knee-jerk reaction. Do what you got to do. Do the planning. Do the financial modeling. I don't think we have the information tonight, and I would, I believe we should refer it back. Supervisor Rose.
I certainly concur with what you said. But let me just bring to your attention on this issue of loss, because around, I believe it was 2008, Mary Lichter was the director. It's about the same time that I found this opinion. If you want to look at it, I'll pass it around, which said that counties do not have the authority under state law to issue a liquor license to themselves to operate a facility. One of the things we talked about then was how do we reduce that loss? And what we did was we pulled out after 2008 the indirect costs. The costs of finance, the cost of corporation counsel, et cetera, and you had a formula that passed along those costs to them to reduce that loss. And we did reduce that loss. But I would point out to you that when you look at 2009 at a loss of $211,716, or 2010 of $342,643, or 11, they say, of about $200,000. we're not comparing those to the older figures where the indirect costs were already in there. So if you really wanted a comparison, you'd put those indirect costs back here and those losses would be even greater. And don't think we did better in 2009 because it dipped down to $211,000. We just changed the way we were doing things. The reason those indirect costs were in there was because we were supposedly operating the golf course as a business. And if it's operated as a business, then you do pay a corporation counsel for their legal fees or a finance department for their accounting fees, etc. Personnel department for their services, and that's why they were pushed over there. It wasn't to just kind of push it off to the side for some other accounting reason. It was done because you were comparing it to private business. Following through with that thinking, we then, as a county board, have to say to them, if you're a business, then operate it as a business. And there's no private business that would be in business with these kind of figures. They'd be in bankruptcy court a long time ago. So we're not operating it like a park. We're not operating like a bike course at a bike trail at Silver Lake Park. I agree with what Mr. Clark says with respect to operating the course. If you're going to operate the course, you operate it. You're either in business or you're out of business. You either have the red nine and you maintain it in a quality way, or you're not in business. You might end up with a bigger loss because fewer people go there. I say if the idea is to close it in 13, then close it in 12. I don't see what's going to happen here, except if your strategy is to maintain it another year in hopes that our losses will look better and therefore we'll revisit it. We'll try it in 2014. It'll come back and pretty soon it'll wash out. The practice facility, I did read the email. I did see the folder that was part of it. I did email back the question, why should I support $500,000 on a practice facility, which you now say will cost me $40,000 a year to operate, to suffer a $200,000 loss. The way I calculate it is it's at least now, in this year, a $240,000 loss. That's not a good idea. On the concession, again, here was the city tried that over at the railroad station. And they couldn't make it. They were paying all the money to the city. Nothing left for themselves. The city wouldn't reduce the rent. They left. They put it out for bid, and it's empty. So are we going to be in that same position here? Maybe we'd be better off going to the state than trying to get the legislation passed so we could issue ourselves a liquor license. The idea was to have, there's some other alternatives, and that is to pay some fee. We operate it, pay some fee to some county tavern here to partner with us so that we would use their license, but we would operate it. I mean, those are other ideas, but that's not for this evening. I think referring this back, and I would so move, Mr. Chairman, is the way to go this evening. But if there's certainly nothing wrong with closing the Red Nine tonight, with at least a recommendation to the board that we do it in 12, if the committee would support it, I would support it.
I'll second that. His motion.
Which one?
You said you'd make the motion
to refer it back to close the Red Nine
back to the committee.
Okay.
Bob, and I'd like to talk on it.
Okay, it's been...
I suggest.
Supervisor Rose, are you done?
Yes.
It's been moved by Supervisor Rose to refer it back to the committee, seconded by Supervisor Singer. Chairman Molinaro.
On the referral as well, because it's timely that the motion is there, I agree there's some work to be done. My intention with the issue coming forward was to give time study this, to give time for the golf director and his team to bring the citizen committee together that is part of the golf course right now and have that dialogue with the users. You know, you're going to get the criticism, whether it comes from the former disgruntled employee who says that Velocity didn't talk to any golfer yet. All of the data they collected came specifically from the golfers. To competing golf courses who are going to have their take on what we're doing and how we're doing it. What we need is information that comes forward with specific detail, detail that we can get our minds around and make an informed decision. When you talk about referral, Terry's comments, all of which are on target, here's the missing piece. Close Red 9 today, close Red 9 next year. It is not going to make up the deficit. So, if you're going back to committee, the other component that I need to see come forward, and if it has to be a motion from the county board, I'll get something on the agenda and get it done. Plan A is what you're going to bring forward, which may or may not include a practice facility, may or may not include closing Red 9, may or may not include whatever. Concession stands, outsourcing, that's going to be your proposal. I need to see a plan B that says, here's what happens if we outsource this entire operation, just like Racine County does. Otherwise, you need to come forward closing Red 9 and White Birch, or you will not make up the deficit, so why are we bothering talking about it? Then you've got to come to the decision before you get here with whatever proposal you have, and that is, are we going to operate and fund? And it's a matter of what level you want to fund it at. Call it a deficit, call it a operations, call it whatever you want. Make that decision. Are you going to operate and fund it over and above what you take in? If you're not inclined to do it, Red 9 doesn't get you there. And you better have another alternative. Or you'll have this discussion, circular as it always is. I won't make any of the arguments tonight with going back to committee that I would typically have, or that I have made up until now and will make in the future. But if you don't come forward with a plan to close it, we'll get absolutely nowhere. I'm sorry, a plan to outsource the entire operation. I need to understand what the potential is there. Does that mean you put out an RFP right now to get a sense of what the opportunities are? I know I'm talking about your livelihood, Dan. I respect that. But you understand where I'm coming from. Close Red 9 today. You are no better off other than you've minimized the deficit. You ever eliminated it, and you won't, if nothing else changes. And I mean play and everything else. And I think you will find someone who would come in to operate this entire facility on both courses. And the first thing they demand is an appropriate practice.
Supervisor Singer.
I guess what we need to do is look back at the study, and one of the things that the study brought out is that the facilities that are close to the population centers are being utilized, and utilized well. Pets is being, you probably run pets at a higher rate if you could get the plays in them, because it's so close to the people. I have a question, and I do agree, and that's one of the reasons I seconded the motion, is that I think there's a lot of unanswered questions here. And also, what do you do if you do close the Red line? Red, as far as the Red itself, and what's your proposal? What percentage of the Red would be used for practice? Are you talking about 20%, 50%? What are you talking about?
40%.
40% would be strictly practice.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. 60 would be.
And the other question is, if we do that and we don't do the practice facility, what else do we do there? I mean, what else do we do with the Red? Is there possibilities to have a private developer take it over and run it privately and have him do any ones, maybe just on the Red, you know, that like Supervisor Molinaro said, what are other options, you know? Can we piece off that to someone else? Maybe even, but I don't know what the restrictions are on the land and everything. And that's where you would have to look at that and say, okay, can they develop around it? Can they put condos around it or something? What are the options out there?
We had Joe Cardamone from Corporate Counsel to look at that, and there is no options to sell it or give it away. I mean, in the statutes that he looked at, it's my understanding that the only option is to utilize that land for other recreational activities. So our only other option with that property is to give it to the parks.
Okay.
And then we take our ability to create revenue away, and okay. It's just an extra expense to maintain it in the park system.
So I agree with the fact that we need to take a look at it as far as not just the only thing that I'm convinced on is that you need to outsource the concessions, and you should probably look at doing it as fast as possible, because if we're not making any money on it right now, you might as well get that RFP out there and do it. The other ones, I'm not so sure whether you should close it, because you really haven't come up with enough information for us to do this. But I think there should also be an RFP for the outsourcing of the whole operations, like the chairman said, just to see what the other option is, and how it compares, and how it can be managed to even compete with that. So I think it needs to go back to committee.
And as you make that consideration or that evaluation of outsourcing, obviously you want to hit the pros and cons, because I know 6 or 8 years ago there was some talk about that as well, and there was always concern if someone else comes in, are they going to maintain it, or are they going to let it dry, let it go to hell, and then it's back in our hands again, because it's our asset that we have a significant investment in. Supervisor
Grady. We're on the referral, is that correct?
Yeah.
Motion to refer. I'll support referring this back to committee. Lest anyone think that this was an exercise in futility, it's not. This is basically a distillation of the velocity report, which is about that thick. So there's going to be a lot of information in there. There's going to be certain things that are appropriate to what we're trying to accomplish. There's certain things that are not. So what you're looking at here is a starting point. And for my money, this is a pretty good starting point. Yeah, it has to be fleshed out. We have to determine some dollar amounts if we do operate a practice facility. So I think going to the committee is appropriate for that. But I think that's good that the community and this committee can see through the light of day a relatively transparent process here. This is not a back room, closed door, smoky meeting. This is basically saying, look, these are the things we think we need changes in. We have to do some additional work on them. And through the committee process, I think we'll accomplish that. Thank you.
Supervisor Gens.
Okay. I mean, I'm hearing all kinds of different things with this referral as well. I'm convinced that we should close the Red 9 and we should make it a practice area. And I wasn't coming in. I mean, I wanted to have an open mind and listen to everybody's discussion. But I also agree that if you're going to have it open, you got to maintain it and have it open. You're either going to have it open or closed. So if you are going to have it open, you got to maintain it like it's part of everything as we're going forward. When we're referring this back to the committee, I would like to see what the numbers are on the practice facility. You know, more numbers as pertaining to my questions before, how much it's going to cost to maintain it. I was interested to hear what portion is actually going to be used. I think Supervisor Singer ask that question. That's a valid question. I think, and Supervisor Gens is exactly right. Supervisor Gens is right. Sorry, I just had a flashback. Anyway,
you're right. No pun intended, right?
You need to take some time and think about this. But I don't know if they're going to actually be able to come back with, here, we're going to send out this RFP to see if this is, you know, somebody wants to take over it. I think right now what we're sending this back for is to get us some numbers on what we think the Red 9 closing is going to save us, what a practice facility would cost, what the benefit would be to that. I mean, that's really, and then I agree, you got to get the alcohol in there.
Do that.
I think it's important. For you're getting questions and you're having events cancel and not come because of that. So I think that should be looked at by the committee immediately. So I'd like to see something come back to us with some numbers on it. I don't know if it's going to be in the scope that Chairman Molinaro wants immediately, But we do need to have those numbers, so I would look forward to seeing that from this referral.
Okay. We've been talking about this for about 40 minutes. I think everybody's at least had an opportunity to chime in on this. If there's any more discussion, I would want it to be specifically to the referral and the accomplishment of any task or analysis that you want done when it comes back from the administration. Otherwise, I want to get to a vote. Is there anybody else that wishes to speak? Okay, on referral, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This has been referred back to the committee.
Chairman?
Supervisor?
Just one other new thing. That is, I would like to urge the committee and move that we urge and ask one of our state legislators to introduce legislation to so that a county such as ours can issue a liquor license to itself. Personally, I think that's a better solution than the outsourcing of that. I'm very uncomfortable about having some local bar operate a concession there, basically a tavern, and under our flag, and without going into all kinds of reasons, I would just feel more. I think it's a better idea if we do it ourselves.
Okay.
If we're going to operate this,
Mr. Arbit, if you could communicate with the Corporation Counsel's office, if you could have a resolution drafted that I know time is short. I don't know if they want to try to get this, but at least maybe it can go, either can go to the committee or it can go to, it probably falls underneath the executive committee, being that it's a communication with the
legislature.
With the legislature. I don't know if you want to try to get something on the agenda Tuesday where then it can maybe work its way to committee and get back on the board of the session or not. Supervisor Rose.
I agree.
So if we could have, if you could coordinate with Supervisor Rose, you know, the gist of what he's looking for, if there could be a resolution, perhaps it could be put on the agenda.
The board meeting.
Okay. Tuesday. Then it can be referred. Our man. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, it is 7:22. Agenda item 13 from the Sheriff's Department. Resolution regarding the 2012 Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistant, OJA, right?
Yes.
Multi-jurisdictional drug task force grant, Southeast Area Drug Operations Group.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sergeant Urquhart with the Kenosha Sheriff's Department Drug Operations Group. Presenting the resolution for the 2012 Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance Award. The drug task force that we are part of, CDOG, which is the Southeast Area Drug Task Force, it includes the counties of Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, Dodge, and Jefferson. We have received an award from OJA for $211,792. Kenosha County's share of that is $53,140. This resolution requests a modification of the 2012 expenditure and revenue budgets for the drug unit to account for our share of the grant award. Kenosha County is one of the lead agencies in this task force, and we assist Walworth as far as the collection of documents and collection of all of the paperwork that is required for us to receive this grant.
Move approval.
Second.
I move by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Gentz. Any discussion?
This is a continuation of a lot of different grants that we get. I mean, they have these investigations that they pay for, and that's what it does, right?
This is a part of it. We receive funding from several different areas. I've been here before representing OSADEF grants, stuff like that. This is a specific one through OJA. It helps me operate the unit.
Answers my question. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay. Anybody else? On the resolution, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you very much. I believe you guys have the original.
We do. It is 7:24, agenda item 14, from the Sheriff's Department resolution regarding Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance Live Scan Replacement Upgrade Grant.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the resolution before you is to accept $13,600 in grant funds from the state of Wisconsin in order to upgrade our live scan equipment at the Sheriff's Department. As part of our budget in 2012, including the next resolution, the Sheriff's Department and Joint Services will be purchasing a new live scan system. This money will help defer the county's portion of that.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gant, second by Supervisor Rose. Any discussion on the resolution? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. $7.25, agenda item 15 from the Sheriff's Department. Resolution regarding request to suspend competitive bid process for purchase of replacement electronic fingerprinting equipment and installation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the resolution before you this time is for the main purchase of the live scan system. It's to forego the normal bidding process and purchase the MorphoTrack live scan equipment. The reason why we'd like to do that is because the state of Wisconsin uses MorphoTrack, and by us having MorphoTrack, we'll be able to better communicate with the state of Wisconsin, get more accurate and updated information back from the state of Wisconsin. It also is the unit that we're replacing in 2001, was the MorphoTrack. We can use some of the equipment from that to help keep this up, and we won't have to do the retraining that we would if we wanted to get it better. Plus, the city of Kenosha has purchased equipment for their police department, which would require the MorphoTrack to be in-house as we have.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Gintz. Any questions on the resolution? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
It is 7:27, agenda item 16, from Joint Services, presentation on the proposed public safety software program.
Curious.
Trying to get my presentation up and running. I'll be
right. It's looking better. I saw this last night. Along with these other resolutions.
Was it a good show?
I didn't see it. I wasn't there. No, I'm not on that committee.
I promise I won't read that whole book. It's a resource material.
We've got sole source.
Is that the sole source?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Pass it to Gansy Slipper. I signed it and set it there.
Why is that you?
So this is our last meeting with you as chair.
Unless there's some sort of emergency.
We can vote.
Good evening. Tom Genther, Director of Joint Services. I have with me several people that may speak at different times throughout the meeting. We're going to do a presentation on the public safety software. I'm sure you've heard about it at some point or another. It's a very complex, very large system. There are a great deal of intricacies to it. I've worked with many people, some within Joint Services, some in the county, that have helped us develop an understanding of the system and how complex it is. Ray has helped. Marty has helped. I also have managers and supervisors from Joint Services, Josh, Rhonda, Seb, and Pat. I'll be going through it, and if at any point in time you have any questions, please ask, and we'll certainly try to explain that to you. What has happened is that there are some problems with the public safety software as it is functioning today. These problems are significant. Some of them threaten that some of the systems that we have will be shut down by the federal government, which would be a huge safety issue, communication issue for the officers that operate on the road, as well as some of the inefficiencies within the system need to be addressed. We've had a consultant come in, review this system, His recommendation is that the system be completely replaced. It was first put in 1984. It has been updated many times. The upgrading system, the process to do so, is labor-intensive. It is time-intensive. It is my opinion and the consultant's opinion, as well as many others, that the system just needs to be replaced at this point in time. And we'll go through it and explain all of it as we go through there. I do have a kind of a chart behind all of you over there. What you're going to see is many of these systems continue to loop together. One of those slides that we'll see is that chart. And the only reason I have it up there is that we're going to be discussing those different modules, and it may help to refer to that if you need to look at the different modules as we do go through this. Thank you. So, again, if you have any questions, please just ask. Hope you don't mind if I stand up. It's going to be a little bit easier for me to do so and work this thing here. Where we came from, this is the old safety building. Some of the old equipment that we had. One of the most interesting things in this picture right here, this telephone, is kind of a bat phone that used to connect to the Zion nuclear power plant. If they had a meltdown there, they would call and say, hey, we have a meltdown, and everybody could start driving north to get out of here. It is obviously since been disconnected, but I think it's some interesting stuff. The one picture in the upper right-hand corner is a teletype. If you started law enforcement in 1980 like I did, you had something very similar to that. Had the ticker tape come out of there. We've come unbelievable distance from what it was then. What is the public safety system? It's a software connection between emergency responders, law enforcement personnel, dispatch, telecommunicators, civil process, jail. It is a very large system. It is specifically written and developed for records management, developing reports, entering data, jail management, dispatch, and other specialized functions. Within this public safety software, we serve various agencies, the Sheriff's Department, Police Department, Fire Department, Emergency Medical, County Fire, employees within Joint Services, citizens, multiple or municipal and circuit courts. There are over 100 different software applications within this public safety software. That is how huge this is. Some of them are the mobile data system. We'll talk about in great detail, the computer-aided dispatch, records management. Those are some of the more prominent ones in there. It is a robust system. One of the things that our consultant did was put together a topology of our communication system within Kenosha County. This is the whole manner in which we communicate. The public safety software, I forgot how this trigger works. Public safety software is this area right here, and we're going to continue to drive down into this whole thing so we can look at this system as it exists today. Okay, this is the same chart that we have here. This is the public safety software system in large view. These are the major modules that we have there. Again, they are all interrelated, and you can see some of the different submodules that are interfaced with it. The records management system is really the system that drives the bus. It is where everything continues to dump into. Anytime you make a phone call to ask for a police officer to come to your house, eventually that data is dumped into the records management system. All the information that comes from the jail, the prisoners that are there, where they're housed, what medication that they're on, all that information is entered into the jail database, eventually sent to the records management system. All the other things, this is essentially the whole system. Let's see. Some of the statistics about this system: there are over 13 million data elements. Anytime there is any interaction with it, it is essentially a data element. And so there are 13 million of them throughout the year. There are over 700,000 digital records. I make a phone call and request a squad to come to my house, there's going to be a record of that. Part of that is the digital records that are entered in by the dispatchers, by the records clerks. Last year, We processed over 24,000 paper reports. 22,000 of those were offense reports. 2,000 of them were accident reports. Again, all of this is being dumped into the RMS, the system that we're using. Calls for service, in the last 3 years, there were over 200,000 calls for service within each year. Evidence, we brought in over 16,000 pieces of evidence in 2011. Every piece of that evidence had to be documented in some way or another. I've got a picture of the evidence room later on. You'll see how this is all stored. It all has to be categorized going through this. Again, we're keeping all of this within this records management system, within the evidence management system. We disposed of 900 pieces of evidence, and booking, fingerprinting, the jail itself, they booked, I believe, 15,000 prisoners, or had over 15,000 bookings in last year. All of that data continues to just loop through this whole system. You can see how it has all continued to be integrated. Okay, computer-aided dispatch. You make a phone call to our dispatch center. It is going to be entered into it. These are all the modules and sub-modules that are there. Again, I'm not really a computer person. If you opened up the server that we have within Joint Services, you're not going to see all these little bubbles in there. They're not going to have these titles on there. But they are digital parking spots for information. Kind of like your home computer keeps all that information in there. And these are all digital parking spots for that information, which is accessible through permissions. Marty can certainly explain it a little bit better than I can. Does that work okay?
I think that's very good. I think the one of the things that we've really realized as we start working on this is the complexity, the overall complexity of this. And if you, from a business perspective, if you kind of take a look at this, this is the public safety software system is very much comparable to an ERP system for business enterprise resource planning that does your finances, your purchase orders, your HR systems, those type of things. So this has those same tentacles that go out and touch and reach many different areas. Definitely computer-aided dispatch or mobile data computers is the one of the areas that we recognize is very deficient, that we are susceptible for a penalty from CJIS, the Criminal Justice Information Systems Group, for the state and federal organizations. So, that's kind of an update from my perspective, I guess. Okay.
Again, if you make a phone call to dispatch, all this information is going to be entered into the CAD system. Eventually, it's going to be entered into the records management system. It's all going to be downloaded. We have all these different modules and submodules. You can see, I think I gave you all a copy of this, and you can read these modules, these names, these titles much better. But we have various interfaces with there, the time system. That is the system through the state so that you can run somebody's driver's license. And again, all this information is entered into it and continues to loop through this whole system. There's a permanent record of it. I'm going to try to, I'm going to try to put a little face with a function here, and then I'm going to have Josh make a couple comments on it. You make a phone call, 911, you make a phone call requesting an officer to come to your house. It first starts out in the dispatch area. The call is then dispatched to a law enforcement officer. They're sent to your house. The field units can access information, some of this through the RMS, some of this through the dispatchers. This is the in-car computer here. Let's see if I can do this. Right here. That is the mobile data system. This is one of the things that is most at risk. If we don't have this system, if the law enforcement officers don't have this system, it is going to create huge problems. What happens is the officers, when they get, if they make a traffic stop, they can go on this computer and they can run your license plate, and it's going to come up to them. They can run your name and see what your driving status is. They stop somebody on the street, they can run that person. We don't have this system, which is at risk. All that information is going to have to go over the radio. And the dispatchers are just going to be inundated and completely unable, probably, to keep up with this level of traffic. We need this system. We're going to talk a lot more about this system. It's called Data Pursuit. It is completely unstable. It shuts down on a daily basis to the point where we have to have our IT people go reboot this whole system and start it up again. If the IT people aren't there to do it, we have to have supervisors from either the Sheriff's Department or Police Department go reboot the system. Not a good way to run an operation. It needs to be replaced, like I said, it is that way. And then eventually the dispatchers keep track of the officers and interact with them. Josh, what are you there?
Can I just summarize a little bit?
Yes.
Tom did a good job. I think he explained most of it very briefly. A couple of points I'd like to make is that there's, out of all of the systems that we use, this the public safety software system that we're talking about here doesn't encompass everything. There are other systems out there that will in the future need to be replaced. So replacing this, for instance, will not replace the 911 switch and that system. So there are some other systems out there that are just as important as this, but are not covered under this. The other point is the next generation 911 that you'll hear a lot about. Our current CAD system will not be able to keep up with the things that are coming down the line and that other states are already doing with next generation 911, such things as receiving text messages over 911, receiving pictures, receiving video, and those types of things. Currently, the phone system wouldn't handle that either, but once that is replaced and there's some infrastructure in the state to do that, the CAD system is going to be able to have to be able to handle that also. So that's one of the big things coming down the road. The CAD system is used to track all the statuses of units that assist the dispatcher, so they're not sitting there having to go off of memory to check on this officer, is this officer safe, and those types of things. So it's very much a safety issue that this CAD works properly. I think that pretty much covers most of the some other things.
Maybe, hey, if I could just make a couple of points. One of the things that we've done is in our budget, within the county IT budget, there's been an ongoing refresh of the squad's laptop computers that you'll see at top of. That does not change. What we're talking about with this project is really the software that runs on those systems. So the investments that we've made to keep the squads up to date remains constant. As Josh mentioned, the 911 system, and that's a telephone system that we have that's specific for dispatch. That's in the CIP, so it should not be any surprise on something that's in the future years that we're talking about as well. So just to kind of clarify those two things a little bit.
Thank you. Continuing on, we're going to talk about the records management system. Again, we have all the modules, sub-modules. You can see the different systems that are integrated with it. The jail, civil process, and the sheriff's department, those are all integrated with these systems. Right now, they're on a little bit of different versions. We're operating on version Cisco 12, and the jail is on 9, creates some problems for us. That isn't insurmountable at this point. And all the data that's entered in there, the different modules, warrants, arrests, juvenile offenses, incident name, again, all this information is downloaded into the system and is accessible to the officers, to members of joint services, to do whatever we need to do it. The system that we currently have has some inadequacies with it. You really can't do a lot of crime analysis on there. I don't know, there was a television show a couple of years ago where they did all this crime analysis and you saw these pretty pictures and stuff like that and you saw hot spots and that stuff really happens. With this system, we can't do this. When I was at the police department, I tried to do an analysis of the high accident intersections to do a special enforcement of those intersections. I couldn't get that information out of this system. Eventually, Rhonda got all the information to me, and it was a stack of paper about 3 inches thick, and I had to go through hand to figure out where those high accident intersections were. With a modern system, with a different system, you should be able to do that with the press of a button and move on. That today is modern law enforcement. That's what we're doing. We're trying to keep people safe. We're trying to give the tools to our officers, and we need to continue to do that. Trying to put, again, a face with a function. This very first picture on the left, every piece of paper that is brought into evidence, or excuse me, brought into records, has to be time-stamped. People, accident reports, reports that the accident, that the officers write, witness statements. Every piece of paper is time-stamped. And Rhonda, why don't you give us the statistics on some of that?
On a daily basis, the clerks and records spend 13 and a half hours just date stamping initially in this incoming paperwork. We have an immense amount of incoming paperwork on a daily basis. On a yearly basis, that's almost 5,000 hours is spent just doing the date stamping. That's before we can do any data entry. We have to date stamp all the paperwork first.
And as we move to other systems, if we have a field reporting system, if the officers can do a report in their squad, that becomes digital. We're never going to get rid of all the paper that we have. It's just impossible. But if we could even cut that down in half, could you imagine the inefficiencies that we solve, the time that we're going to save to allow people to do other things? The next picture is the data entry that's going on, all the information that is entered from the reports and put into the system. The file cabinets, that's where 3 years of reports are maintained. The boxes on top of those are reports that are going to be sent out to be digitized. At this point, within the Joint Services budget, we have $35,000 or $36,000. I'll just hit that real quick.
We only have, we're limited in space. So after 3 years, we do pull the boxes or put the reports in boxes so we can have the new year that we have a filing cabinet space for. And on a yearly basis, and we budget $35,000 a year. I've been with Joint Services for 21 years, and that figure continues to rise because the amount of paperwork that is generated continues to rise. So there is a lot of expense associated with the cost and maintenance of paperwork. Also, in addition to get those boxes ready to be out sent out for imaging, we have to have personnel sit in. Each box contains about 450 reports. They have to manually go through that box of paper reports and make sure that we account for every report before we send it out. So it is very labor intensive.
And then a substantial amount of time is spent with the records clerks interacting with the law enforcement officers. That's just briefly some of the operation of records and the process that goes on there. Evidence and identification. Again, we have the different modules and submodules in there. One of the biggest, every piece of evidence that is brought in here has to be tracked. To get rid of a piece of evidence, there are any number of different statutes, and there has to be permission from the district attorney's office, police department, sheriff's department. It's a huge system. The evidence management system that we have right now, while we're able to keep track of a lot of the or all of their evidence, it is not an overly efficient system that allows us to manage this very well. There are far better evidence management systems that are in place. And within this is also the live scan that we talked about earlier and got permission to move on. Just a couple of pictures, face with function. We have a deputy putting a piece of evidence in one of the lockers, and this is actually the new evidence locker room. It is state of the art. It is a fantastic facility that all of you guys had approved and has since built, and Ray has gone about putting this thing into action. Again, the evidence is taken out of the other side. Picture on the left is one of the evidence rooms within the evidence facility. All of those pieces of evidence are categorized. They are kept by some type of case number. Again, if we had a evidence management system that was a little more sophisticated, we would be able to do a much better job with this. This is a very labor-intensive job. This evidence just continues to grow, and you can see we're bringing in 16,000 pieces. We're getting rid of 900. At some point in time, those numbers are going to be a huge problem. And then the next picture is the live scan. Seb is here. I'm talking as fast as I can because I know we're going late, but I want to make sure you get a whole flavor of all of this. Seb, you want to describe this?
Yes, on the right-hand side, all the way on the right-hand side of that photo is the live scan, and you can kind of see the monitor. That's what was discussed earlier. That is the electronic fingerprint machine. We take juveniles, all juveniles that go through the facility are pictured and printed there. It's an electronic fingerprint. It takes the photo, it takes the print. Once we send it through, it goes to Madison. If it's a juvenile, it probably will not go to the FBI. But if it's an adult that's not going through the jail, it's just going through us. It goes through from the state to the FBI very, very quickly. On the left side of that photo is the old manual system. There's a turntable with ink on it. We still do the manual fingerprints, which we a computer never fails, but we still do teachers and other people through the old-fashioned way of ink.
This is the jail system. That middle bubble that we have here, this inmate tracking, the amount of data that goes into there is just immense. You're talking about medication, where these people are, what's on there, if they're in Huber, all these different modules and submodules on there. Again, there is a huge amount of data. It's going from the jail into the records management system. It continues to loop with this full integration, which is really needed. Face with function. This is the booking area upstairs in the jail, and that's a cell. Fleet maintenance. We maintain all of the police department, sheriff's department, squads, on the different modules. This is a little bit of a standalone system. It does not have a very efficient parts management system, inventory system. Pat, how many pieces of equipment do we go through?
Equipment and repair supplies are numbered in the thousands. We don't have an efficient way to track that. We would like to be able to utilize a barcoding system to better utilize the whereabouts of those items, the warranty information associated with those items. That's kind of like a parent's asset type system with the equipment that you'll see some of it installed in the trunks that allows the officers to communicate with dispatch and so on.
We've got a couple of pictures. The top one is the installation of the computers in the squad. The one on the left is all the equipment that is in the trunk. And if you want to be a mechanic in fleet maintenance, you have to be very flexible. There's Tom, who's probably 6'2". He's crawled in this trunk, and he is installing the various equipment that is in there. A lot of equipment and money invested in this stuff. All right, significant issues with the public safety software. The mobile data system, it does not meet CJIS requirements. It puts the entire system at risk. Data pursuit, the application shuts down an average of once a day, requires that IT reboot it. Present system does not have features of field-based reporting. Field-based reporting, officers get to type up their reports in the squad. The city and the county do things a little bit different. Within the city, when you complete a report, usually you walk in and you drop it on the sergeant's desk. They sign it. It gets sent to records. If you look at the efficiency that's involved there, it's extremely inefficient. The officer is parking his car, driving to the building, walking in there, dropping this on their desk, and walking back out again. How much time are we talking about with that? Within the sheriff's department, they stay on the road, they do the reports out on the road, and they bring them in later on, so that inefficiency isn't there. But with the field-based reporting, you can hit a button, and that report goes to your supervisor digitally. He reviews it, gets sent to records. It becomes a much more efficient system. Limited access to RMS data. The officers don't have full access to the RMS data. In many systems, you certainly do have access to that. The application is highly customized. Since 1984, it's been updated many, many times. That customization takes months to complete. A while back, we had Cisco version 9, tried converting it to 11. They worked on it for 9 months. 12 came out, and they stopped that conversion process, never fully realized 11 and then went to 12. It was then another year before 12 was up and running, and to this day, it's not fully implemented. Extremely time-consuming, labor-intensive process. The system is underutilized. Continuing on, but the CAD systems, the AVL, Automatic Vehicle Locator, it is a system where each squad can be identified where it's at in the city or the county. It is not a very efficient nor effective system. We have had squads that have been located in the middle of Lake Michigan. It does not work very well. It is a safety application that and has many other usefulness with it. Next generation 911, the texting, pictures, video. Josh talked a little bit about that. That's coming our way. It's federal legislation. We're going to have to comply to that. It needs to be, Josh, what's the word that we need to have for the 911?
I'm not sure what we're doing for it.
Transitional.
The transitional. There's standards out there for integration for 911 systems to the next generation, and there's transitional standards that National Emergency Number Association has basically already set, and they're already out there, and there are companies that meet those standards. And again, that's kind of going back to the point that the current system won't meet those standards, and if this CAD is not replaced, where we're currently at with the mobile data system is where we'll be at with the 911 system.
So what's going to happen is where we are with data pursuit right now, we're going to be very much in the same situation with the next generation 911 in a couple of years. Proper functionality of the public safety software is critical to public safety and officer safety. I think we all can agree that's certainly a priority. Where we are today, communication study identified gaps, said that the system essentially needed to be replaced. Conclusions, the current system does not meet our needs. The mobile data system and related functions are at risk. It absolutely positively needs to be replaced. The system is ineffective, inefficient, labor-intensive, non-integrated. Upgrades take a whole lot of time. Similar scenario that we're experiencing with data pursuit will replay with next generation 911. And as much as practical and reasonable, there needs to be a fully integrated system. Conclusions, we need to give our employees use the system and the tools that are necessary to do the job. Next steps, where we are right now, we did a needs assessment. We determined all the needs of the different agencies. The needs assessment included the Sheriff's Department, Police Department, Fire Department, Joint Services. We decided what applications we needed. We drafted an RFP. We invited comments on the RFP from all the member agencies, and we have established a vendor list. We have prepared a final RFP, and yesterday that RFP was sent out. We have an evaluation committee, which are members of all the different communities, police department, sheriff's department, joint services, fire department. Marty sits on it, and Carol is there as well. Somebody from city IT. We're going to be evaluating these proposals once they come in, looking for the systems that's best going to meet everybody's needs. I know I've taken a great deal of your time. I think Ray may have a short summary with all of them.
The only thing I wanted to say is because I was kind of involved in this peripherally, working with the radio part of the new building addition and the dispatch center design, as well as the towers are part of the public works infrastructure that hold all the antennas. But the thing that I came away with in looking at this, which is, as Thomas explained, an incredibly complex system, is it really is, to use what he said, it is our public safety ERP system, and it's utilized by the entire commercial community, public safety community. I looked at it, I looked at the numbers for the city PD budget, the city fire department budget, and the county sheriff's department budget. The Kenosha community spends about $80 million a year for those services. So it is the single largest investment the Kenosha County taxpayers make in public safety-related items. This ERP system, Tom gave, just touched on, and Rhonda touched on, some of the inefficiencies that some of this stuff brings to the table that prevents boots on the ground from doing what they need to be doing. folks in the back room being able to do stuff more efficiently and effectively to support those boots on the ground. This is the system. So the dollars for this, we don't know for sure what it's going to be. It's going to be significant. But the context that you need to look at it, at least in my mind, is, as Tom explained, the system we've got now dates back to 1984. The system we're going to put in, whatever it is probably going to be in place, should be probably 10 years and turned over. In our case, it's probably going to be 15 years. At $80 million a year, we're going to have, as a community, invested over $1 billion in public safety, which isn't much in Washington, but it's still a hell of a lot in Kenosha. In 10 years, this is the thing that's going to allow people to do their job efficiently and make the best use of those resources. It's important to look at it, I think, in that context, as opposed to just looking at the bottom line and this is going to be a one-year cost or whatever. No, this is going to be the instrument that allows people to do their jobs efficiently and effectively for the next 10 to 15 years. That's the lens that... So, that's my motion.
Marty, you have anything to add?
Well, I think, you know, just a couple of points. As Tom mentioned, you know, the key is an overall integrated system. We can go out and we can take a look at point solutions for all these different applications. But the real challenge would be to take those point solutions and try to integrate them and have them share the same database and same information. I think there would be much more work and labor involved with that than taking a look at an integrated solution. The other thing is strategically, I think this, Tom is going to provide the leadership that some of the things that we're challenged with is the amount of customization that we've done on the existing application that prohibits us from doing application upgrades. Tom mentioned it took months and months, 9 months, and then finally said, now we're going to wait till the next version. So historically, we've gone out there, we've done heavy customization for the application. So as new versions of the Cisco or whatever it may be are rolled out and released, it's very difficult to keep up to date. And I think that's a vision and a strategy that's going to change, that we're going to say, hey, we may have to change some of our business processes to fit the application instead of changing the application to fit our business process. So.
Unless you have some questions, I'm done, and thank you for your time.
Supervisor Gray.
Just a couple background questions so we can kind of get our minds around this rather large project. If you had selected a vendor today and you knew right now who you're going to go with, how long would it take to implement?
The estimates that I've received are anywhere from 12 to 18 months.
So at least a year, year and a half out.
Yeah. Okay. And just to get it, there's data conversion, which is huge. The amount of data right. That we have, all that has to be converted.
Right.
The actual implementation, putting the project in place. So, yeah.
Timeline for RFP. It's been sent out, and you will get your RFPs back within a certain time, and then propose make a decision. Give us a timeline on that.
I believe the timeline is the proposals have to be back in by April 16th. Carol, we have a
proposals are due April 16th, and then we're going to begin evaluations on the 17th.
The evaluation will include all that evaluation committee, people looking at the different applications, how they meet our needs. They're going to include site visits to look at these different applications, how they are working at the different law enforcement facilities. My idea, my goal in this is that I believe we need to get a system in place that meets our needs. I don't think we can just grab one and say, okay, this is the cheapest or whatever. It really has to meet our needs because they are just so vast.
And that was one of my questions. You actually want to be able to go and see it on site, evaluate it, and make sure it's going to work. The previous systems you've used here have been from Cisco. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So in this whole scenario, how big a leg does Cisco have up on the proposed RFP because they've been involved with this in the past?
Right now, we're at... Long answer. We're at Cisco version 12. We have had the source code, so we've been able to customize it. That source code is no longer going to be made available to us. So Cisco has what is, I believe, their version 14, which is going to have to be completely reloaded into our systems. And so while they have had we've used the application. It's not actually Cisco is here. It is being, the service is being provided by ComSys. And so I don't know that they have a significant leg up on it.
Okay.
In my mind, they are going to be equal as we look at these systems to make sure they meet our function.
Last question, and then I'll let go. Are there any vendors out there you predict will have open source code you can actually customize as you have with the Cisco? Is that going to be an option or not?
I don't believe so. It's my understanding within the industry that they are going away from that as much as possible. And I think Marty probably...
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Supervisor Molnar. Just one comment. It comes from personal experience on a much smaller scale. We implemented a new system several years ago, which was a project management accounting integrated software. Way too robust for what we need. And at the end of the day, the analysis is we probably overspent for a system that we'll use a fraction of. And I think I heard it from Supervisor Grady, also heard it during your presentation, that you want to make sure you get a system here that fits Kenosha County and not a system that is best suited for Chicago or New York or wherever. And I say that not because I trust you won't, but because for me this is a significant expense. You know where I am in terms of the support for law enforcement and our emergency services to make sure they have the tools they need to be safe and to provide the protection that county needs, city as well. At the same time, our budgets and our capital expenses aren't getting any better or any easier. Certainly aren't lighting up anything appreciable. So I think it's important to make sure that we spend the time and the effort to get the system that, in fact, works for us today and for what you believe to be the future that's required in terms of 10 years, 15 years, whatever it might be.
And I certainly appreciate your comments, and whatever the cost of this, it's going to be significant. And as I've said, it's certainly my goal to get the system that's going to meet our needs. And there are so many different agencies here. It really has to meet those individual agencies' needs. I'm not looking for some grand scale system. I want a system that meets our needs today and that we can certainly grow with a little bit, but it's important that it meets our needs right now.
I've heard numbers in the 4 million range. Is that what we're talking about?
The numbers range anywhere from Beaufort County recently put in a system, and it was about $1.5 million. Obviously, they're a little bit smaller than us. There are some other factors there. So they range from $1.5 to $4.5 million. So there's a huge range there. I guess we'll know a lot more once we get the vendor proposals back.
Supervisor Singer.
Is there a possibility you can actually apply for grants like from CGIS and all that kind of stuff to help with the system costs? The Sheriff's Department does seem to get a lot of grants for different things.
We are certainly looking for them, and I have a fairly significant experience with grants. And while a lot of people say, oh, there's a grant out there, it's very difficult to find that grant. We're looking for them. It's very rare that you have a grant for some type of software systems. Most of the time, a lot of the grants, the focus has changed to allow the on-the-street functions take place, but it's certainly something that we are looking at.
Anybody else? Just early on in the process, there was some concern by the Sheriff's Department. Have they, shall we say, bought into this project or the understanding that we need to move forward as one system? And I know that previously we wanted to make sure that our IT director was involved with the process. How does the Sheriff's Department respond to that, or our IT director?
The Sheriff's Department understands that there's a lot of problems with the current RMS. We have not totally decided which way that we may decide to go. That's the Chief Deputy's decision. But we are going into this with an open mind, and we're going to be doing due diligence to make sure that whatever decision we make is the best for the county both for safety and for the dollars.
So the Sheriff's Department has been engaged in this process to the point of getting to the RFP?
Yes, Chief Deputy and I have been on multiple committees involved in setting up the requirements for the RFPs, and we're satisfied that the RFP process is going to be a good process going forward.
So I think one of the things, Mr. Chairman, that we said is that whatever system we selected has to be equivalent, if not better, than what we have today. And you know, that's a commitment that we've made to the Chief Deputy that we're not going to handcuff him literally in the jail. We'll provide a better system than what he has today. And we're using something from 1984. Odds are, I think we can do a better job.
Chairman Molnar.
Somewhat off the topic, but I suppose was on point as anything else. I've gotten multiple emails the last couple of days on some radio communication issue between Silver Lake and Kenosha County. Anyone in the room can elaborate on that?
We've certainly been on top of it. We understand the issue.
I don't pretend to understand it, and I assume that the facts are somewhere.
There was notification
far less made, left or right than what I've heard.
There was notification made to the other agencies in the county that the Sheriff's Department would be switching its analog Sheriff's Department main frequency to digital. I think one of the comments from one of the departments, which I won't mention, was I don't have time to look at my email. So the notification was out there that we were going to be doing this. Unfortunately, while we sent the notification out to people, they didn't necessarily get it. And then when we did go digital, there was a period there where they realized that they couldn't talk on the radio anymore. Everything has been resolved, and everything is working fine now.
Everything is fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, it is 8:12. Agenda item 17 from Finance Information Technology Division, report on broadband development.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Marty Lycock, Director of IT. Just I want to provide a brief update on where we stand on the public safety communication system. I know we're talking a lot about public safety. In my mind, there's really four different areas that we're working on. One is the public safety communications, and that really supports traffic, data traffic to the emergency vehicles as well as the squads. The other is the public safety software that actually runs the application that Tom just spoke to us about. Then we have the 911 system, which is in the CIP, the system that if somebody dials, distributes the call to the agents on the background. And then we have our fiber optic system that we're also putting in place. So scope of county IT responsibility is really at this point the fiber optics as well as the public safety communication system. So the system really consists of, just kind of a refresher. We're putting up 15 towers, or we're using services on 15 towers. Actually, it would have been 16, but we've got an issue with one of the towers here on 60th Street that's not able to accept the equipment. With those 16 towers, what we're doing is really covering 289 square miles for data communications for public safety use. So of those, we've got five towers are complete. All the equipment is installed, up and operational. We've got three more that we've gotten all the paperwork and contracts signed. Rather integrated process to get conditional use permits, permission from landowners, strike a deal with the tower owners and operators. So it's taken a little bit more time than we had anticipated. We've got three more towers that we're just waiting for conditional use permits from municipalities or from the county to complete. And then we've got four more that we're still in the process of doing the contracting and negotiations.
We expect all of our towers to be completed by the, you know, really by the mid-May at the latest. I think we could be optimistic and say that probably by the end of the April timeframe we will be done, but I'll put a little buffer in there. So we've got our tower equipment is one piece of it. The other piece is the relays that we talked about. What allows us to extend the signal is to put very small devices at different locations, whether it be on a silo, a barn, a water tower, which allows us to extend the signal. For public safety, we have 101 relays that we're putting up in place. For the commercial network, we have 61. As of yesterday, we've got 25 of the public safety relays put in place, and 11 of the ones required for the commercial network are completed. We anticipate that we will start rolling out in conjunction with HireCom, our ISP services, where we're going out and targeting unserved and underserved areas. We'll be able to start that in April, the end of April, and we're starting in Bristol is the first area that we're looking at, then probably going on to Brighton, and as the towers are completed, we'll expand that out. There's been a great deal of interest from residents in different areas calling up and saying, how do I get more information? What can I do? One of the things that HireCom is doing is setting up a new website that will provide information about how to sign up, what is the service, what is the cost, when residents or commercial businesses can expect to see the service in their area. So that's been very well received. I think the last piece of this is public safety. When are we going to start working on public safety? We're anticipating that towards the end of June that all the public safety communications infrastructure will be in place and ready to be used. The other thing that I guess the other component of this has always been the vehicles. So we had intended to set up 100 vehicles with different modems to allow the communications back to either the towers or the relays. And that work continues as new vehicles are being outfitted for use. We're installing our, you know, putting the infrastructure in place that we can, when the time is right, we can switch over and use the new modems in the vehicles as well. So it's just kind of a real brief update. I don't know if there are questions or comments.
First of all, thank you for coming and apprising the committee of what's going on. It sounds like really between the communications software, 9/11 system, and the fiber optic system, there's a lot of movement, a lot of things going on in Kenosha County that are taking place. And certainly I think that for future meetings of this committee, we'd like to have some degree of regular appraisal of how we're proceeding forward. So if we could set something up perhaps quarterly, you know, this is now the third month, take another look at 3 months, sometime in June, come back in, unless something, you know, comes up of a more emergent nature. That'll be for the future. In terms of rolling out to Bristol and Brighton in April to the end users, that'll be a retail arrangement between HireCom and the end user for wireless services?
Yes, it will be.
I think it would be very good for this committee to be apprised of what the intentions are before they're rolled out, at least in terms of what the delivery would be to the end consumer, what the pricing would be. I realize that we're contracted with HireCom and we're not directly involved in that, but still, we should have as a committee and as a county some idea of what's taking place prior to it being delivered to the market. So it'd be the recommendation that I have. Any other committee members have comments?
When Supervisor Gantz.
I just want to add something to that. The town of Paris had an informational meeting, I believe it was last month, and they invited HireCom to come an hour before their regular meeting. They also invited all anybody in the town that was interested in it. And I believe we had 30 to 40 people that showed up for that meeting, which they gave an overview of exactly what services they were going to provide, how it was going to work. They connect a little box to your link, and that's how you get your internet service. And I believe they said around the end of April they're going to be rolling it out in Paris as well. So it might be beneficial if Brighton and Bristol were going to do the same, that they might want to do an informational meeting before their town board meetings to let the public come and ask questions and find out about it. But everyone's very excited about it coming out to the county. I mean, there are a lot of people, as you say, that don't have internet service or high-speed internet, so it's a big ticket item that's definitely going to help the county, and it's very positive that the county board and Kenosha County took on that role and are able to provide those services.
Thank you. Barton, anything else?
I was going to comment to Supervisor Grady's comments. Yes, we can provide more information as far as what the scope of services are, what the bandwidth is, what the price is, and I think that's underway. One of the things that we would like to do, there are a couple thoughts. One is we want to make sure that we have an arm's length relationship with HireCon, so it's not construed that the county is involved in providing utility service.
Right.
Saying that, though, we would like to set up a pilot group of users that can give HireCom some feedback if this is something that, you know, really it's we're all involved in, that you know, we want it to be the best that it can be. So let's get a group of users and provide feedback before we go on a wholesale rollout to a number of different communities and find that we need to make some adjustments. So we're going to set up a pilot group of users in different parts of the county and test this thing out to get some feedback. So.
Okay, anything else? Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, it is 8:21. Agenda item number 18 is personnel resolution to establish elected officials' wage package.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is time to have the county board approve the wage and benefit package for the county clerk, register of deeds, and treasurer. We come to you earlier this year because papers are coming out earlier. And so we will need action on this tonight and hopefully on Tuesday. The county clerk, register of deeds, and treasurer laid side by side with all other managers and directors and management personnel fall into the non-classified employee pay plan range F. We have used this as a standard for these employees for a number of years now. They have been placed in the job evaluation tool and have a numeric value that puts them in F. And so we propose salaries for these employees consistent with what would be management counterparts, recognizing that all three of them run significant departments, both in terms of volume and financially. So I come to you tonight with three wages, all the same, that fall into range F, and also integrate the board's action from last budget to increase wages for non-represented employees, or in this case, employees that would fall into those categories, by 1.5% of the midpoint of range F. So you will see on your resolution that we are proposing wages which increase about $1,000 or $1,023 to be specific, each year of the 4 years of the term. We are also placing these employees in the same health benefit that is enjoyed by the non-classified employees, and it will increase as non-classified employees' benefits increase. These folks are treated exactly the same as non-classified. And I should also point out that these wages will not put them to the top of the scale as presently configured. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Moved by Supervisor Rose, second by Supervisor Gantz. Any discussion? Currently, do these employees contribute to their health insurance in the form of a premium contribution?
They do.
They do. Currently, right now, aren't they contributing 10%?
10 or 15, but I believe it's 10.
It's 10%.
Now, 2 years ago, that was removed for the elected officials who were, you know, for whom you established a wage and benefit package. So, county executive and the sheriff presently do not.
Should that be stated in this resolution, or what does it mean? I mean, how does that get addressed? I mean, because if we're defining their compensation package, I think somewhere in here it should reference that they are contributing, and that it's the intention of this committee that they continue. Is that?
If it is the intention of this committee that they do continue.
Or do you think it's covered by resolution already?
It is the proposal that they fall into the non-classified health benefit, which would mean they would not contribute to the premium. They would rather pay the same copays and deductibles that all non-classified employees pay. And that would put them on equal footing with the other elected officials who are in the other off 2 years.
So is it a... Does that mean if the county decides they have employee contributions, let's say in 2013 or 14, that benefits are considered compensation and we're going to have some sort of issue that will be brought up saying we can't change their compensation, or is it...
I'm operating under the Corporation Council's opinion that was offered a couple of years ago. It says, if you're in the non-classified pay plan, what the non-classified employees pay is what you pay. So if you were to introduce a premium contribution for formerly non-reps, now non-classified, that would be passed on to these employees.
Anybody else? I guess by Tuesday, if there can, I just want to confirm that should it pass this way, that if there are premium contributions, they are in a different class per se than non-reps because they are elected and there are rules that cover them. I just want to be very clear that that should we decide to have contributions at a later date, that it will apply to them.
Okay. I'll be ready to answer that question.
Well, okay, and I'll go something before then.
You can put it. Awesome.
Maybe.
I think what he's asking for is for an opinion from like the Corporation Council or something, right?
Yes.
Go back to him?
Yes.
Putting in the resolution doesn't change anything.
Because currently they're making a contribution. They're making a contribution, and they are in the same health plan with everybody else.
Right. They are in the same health plan that they were in when the last wage and benefit package was established 4 years ago.
It's not the same as us.
Okay.
So what we're doing is bringing them in as managers into the management pay health plan. And again, what we've established is that particular benefit, health benefits, can move as the health benefit moves. So as you change my benefit as a non-rep, that would change their benefit as an elected by this resolution, and I will confirm that with corporate counsel.
Okay, so if we just have some sort of opinion, or if we need to make an amendment to the resolution, that just makes it clear that their benefits, they ride along with the rest of the non-reps.
Right. I'll have you all set for that by Tuesday.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Resolution carries. Thank you. It is 8:28, agenda item 19 from the Treasurer, resolution to modify the 2011 Treasurer's budget.
All right. I don't think there should be a horrible shock. If you recall when we did our budget discussion last time, we predicted we were going to have these overdrafts, and as you see, they came to fruition. The good news is that we did, with some of these overdrafts, we're able to make significant increases in our revenues as well, specifically on the tax deed line. The additional cost in the additional properties we had to advertise, which came to that additional cost, allowed us to have an excess of revenue in the interest and penalty line items that we can now present to the board. I think if you looked at the backup sheets that I gave you, the taxes line item for the chargebacks that we mentioned in the resolution. And if you look at that, you'll see one anomaly in there, and that is a huge chargeback from the town of Randall for Powers Lake Construction. As you may not be aware, Powers Lake Construction is in bankruptcy. Originally, they were in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, so we thought we may be getting some payments through that bankruptcy. However, they converted to a Chapter 7, so we currently don't believe we will be seeing any payments anytime soon on that. And as you remember from some of our discussions on personal property chargebacks, personal property is way harder to collect on than real estate because it's on things like construction equipment, and we don't actually have a right to take the construction equipment because they owe us money. So it's a little harder to collect that money. And we are required to pay our proportionate share back to the municipality. We're not paying the municipality share or the school district share. It's our proportionate share and the state share, which is a very small amount, which they later pay back to us. That one line item was almost the entire amount we had budgeted for this year. It's $13,000. We've never had a delinquent personal property charge that was that significant before. And if you recall our discussion last year at budget time, I actually increased that line item for the 2012 budget because I anticipate there will be a second year of those chargebacks from the town of Randall. So that's why we saw that increase in the 2012 budget to compensate for that. Questions?
Yeah, you said that it's going to happen again in 2012.
I don't know for sure, but I'm anticipating there will be some portion again in 2012. We were able to change statute for future years that they will not be able to charge back anything for businesses that are still in business. However, because this is a bankruptcy case, they can still charge it back, because they're out of business. And there's really not a lot we have to do with it. A number of years ago, we asked a court counsel opinion on whether or not there was anything I could do to try to increase the collections on personal property tax. He said, no, statutorily, the duty for collection of personal property tax is on the municipality. You actually have no statutory right to try to go out and collect this money. So while I could work with the municipalities and write mean letters to people, I really can't take any action above that. And we've tried that in some cases. In the case of a bankruptcy, you can't even do that. You can't even contact them. So
under statute, they involve the county into this?
The only involvement of the county is, think of this similar to when property taxes are delinquent, and we pay out all of the other taxing entities their share of the property taxes. In this case, the municipality already paid us for all of these personal property taxes, but they have the right to charge back, if they can't collect on them, to us, our share of those tax bills.
So we did get paid those already?
Yeah, we got paid that back when we settled with them on the personal property tax a year and a half ago now, and now we have to give it back because they can't collect it. So that's what we do.
Any discussion?
Move the resolution.
Second
by Supervisor Gann, second by Supervisor Singer. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
Okay, the audit of bills is going around. Agenda item 21, 833, reports from the finance director, budget manager, and personnel director.
Are we going into closed session?
Has no report. We have the reports in the packet. The only one I'll distribute is the general fund report, which shows the general fund at about $8 million.
Just slightly less than where we were.
We're still going through the book closing, and I think this is conservative at this point. Hopefully it'll be higher. I have one more report if anyone wants. That concludes my report.
Thank you. It is agenda item number 22. It is 8:34, closed session pursuant to section 1985 1C and G, request of an appeal of discipline for a divisional highway employee.
Motion to go into.
So, I'll do better now.
Moved by Supervisor.
Nobody's touched it.
Seconded by Supervisor Rose.
We did before.
Just let that fly over there.
For this one.
Oh.
Aye.
Aye.
Is that a
aye. You can govern or be
safe. Aye. With a cookie.
Aye.
Supervisor Singer?
Aye.